Picture this. You're a performance marketer, right? You've got a few solid years under your belt. You're managing campaigns, tweaking ad copy.
Optimizing keywords, all that good stuff.
Exactly. You know what you're doing. And because you know what you're doing, you've just been handed the keys to the kingdom, like a massive multi-channel budget.
Oh man, you are officially in the big leagues now.
Right. It's this incredibly exciting step up, but almost immediately you notice something is just horribly wrong.
Yep, the realization hit.
Suddenly, those simple, clean metrics you used to rely on when you were just running a single campaign, they don't make sense anymore. Your platform dashboards are showing these incredible results, but
But the actual revenue in the bank just isn't matching up.
not even close.
It is a terrifying moment for anyone stepping into multi-channel budget ownership. You
Yeah.
go from feeling like you have absolute control over your ad spend to feeling like, honestly, the data is actively gaslighting you.
Seriously.
The numbers are just screaming success, yet the financial reality is, well, it's completely detached.
And that terrifying disconnect is exactly what we're untangling today. For this deep dive, we're pulling insights from a practitioner-level course on cross-channel attribution and ROI forecasting.
It's really dense, practical stuff.
Yeah, and our mission today is basically to equip you, the mid-level marketer stepping into budget ownership, with the actual frameworks to untangle this cross-channel mess. We want to help you build, bulletproof forecasts and confidently make the case for budget changes to leadership.
Because to set the stage here, we really need to look at what happens when you scale a budget across multiple channels. Let's say you're suddenly managing $50,000 a month.
Okay, a solid budget.
Right, and you're spreading that across Google, Meta, and Bing. At that level of spend, the total conversions reported by those individual platforms can easily, and I mean easily, equal 1.5 to 2 times your actual real-world sales.
Which is wild. So, if we're going to manage a multi-channel budget effectively, we first have to understand why those numbers are broken in the first place, right? And the source materials point directly to what they call the walled garden problem. Here's the classic scenario every large-scale performance marketer runs into. Last month, Google Search reported, say, 1,200 conversions.
Okay.
Meta Prospecting reported 800 conversions. So you're sitting there thinking, great, 2,000 conversions.
Time for a promotion.
Exactly. But then you log into your backend CRM and the total order count only shows 1,100.
Right. The platforms are taking credit for 2,000 orders, but 900 of those are complete phantoms.
Just ghosts.
Total ghosts. And the reason this happens really comes down to a few structural mechanisms in how digital advertising is tracked. First, you have cross-channel overlap.
Meaning what exactly?
Well, a potential customer might see a Meta ad on Tuesday, right?
Yeah.
But they're busy, so they don't click it. Then on Thursday, they finally have some time, so they search for your brand on Google and actually make a purchase.
Okay, I follow.
Because there's no automatic communication between these competing tech giants, both Google and Meta count that exact same purchase as a win in their own reporting.
So they're essentially just double dipping on the same customer.
Exactly. And then you throw cross-device tracking into the mix.
Oh, yeah, that makes it even messier.
Way messier. Someone sees a Meta ad on their phone while commuting, but they actually buy the product later that evening on their laptop.
Right, because nobody wants to type their credit card on a train.
Exactly. And that is where the technology gets incredibly sophisticated, but also structurally biased. Meta uses its identity graph, meaning they know you're logged into Instagram on your phone and Facebook on your desktop browser.
Oh, so they can stitch those two devices together.
Yep, and they claim the conversion. Meanwhile, Google is tracking that same user because they're signed into Chrome on their laptop. So Google also claims it. Neither platform is technically lying about their touch point.
But neither is telling the whole truth either. Okay, let's unpack this. Because if I think about this in the real world, it's basically like having two different salespeople on a showroom floor aggressively claiming a full commission for the exact same customer.
That's a great way to look at it.
Like salesperson A says, "Hey, I greeted them at the door on Tuesday, so I get the commission." And salesperson B says, "Yeah, well, I rang them up at the register on Thursday, so I get the full commission."
And neither of them is willing to split the check.
Nope.
And adding to that friction is the issue of mismatched reporting windows. Like Meta defaults to a one-day view-through window. If someone just scrolls past an ad without even
No
stopping,
sign by it on their feet.
right, just scrolling. But they buy within 24 hours. Meta takes credit. Google, on the other hand, defaults to a 30-day click attribution window. So you have fundamentally different rules of engagement, different timelines, and different definitions of success, all operating at the exact same time.
Man, we all know the classic ways people try to solve this, right? Like, we know last click heavily biases bottom funnel channels.
Yeah, it ignores the setup.
And first click overcredits the top of the funnel. And then linear attribution is just, well, it's a lazy mathematical compromise. It assumes every touch point is equally persuasive, which is obviously false.
It's never a flat line.
Right. But the materials we're looking at make a really bold claim about data-driven attribution, or DDA. And I have to admit, I always thought data-driven attribution was supposed to be the magic bullet here. Doesn't it use machine learning to assign fractional credit?
It does. But what's fascinating here is that machine learning is only as good as the data it's actually allowed to see.
Okay.
DDA is fundamentally blinded by those walled gardens we just talked about. Google's data-driven attribution model only learns from Google touchpoints. Meta's machine learning only sees Meta touchpoints.
Oh, wow.
Right. Neither algorithm sees the full multi-channel customer journey. So every platform is acting as this highly credible narrator of its own biased truth. They're optimizing for their own ecosystem, not for your total business revenue.
That is a harsh reality check. So the platforms are basically structurally incapable of showing you the full truth.
Completely incapable.
Which means we can't just trust the dashboard. We need a practical way to force the data back into reality. And fortunately, according to the deep dive materials, we don't need some massive, expensive enterprise software platform to do this. We can build a deduplicated attribution view internally.
Yes.
And it starts with a really simple premise. Your backend CRM order data is the absolute ultimate source of truth. The revenue in the bank is the only number that cannot lie.
Your CRM data is your bedrock.
Yeah.
You pull the order ID, the actual revenue collected, and the UTM parameters.
Right. And just real quick for anyone new to the absolute weeds of tracking, UTM parameters are just those little tags added to the end of a URL that tell your backend exactly which campaign or ad the click came from.
Right. Exactly. So that raw data is your starting line.
But if the CRM is the source of truth, what happens when Google and Meta both claim they drove that specific CRM order? Like, how do we break the tie?
This is where we introduce a channel priority hierarchy. It's commonly called a waterfall rule.
A waterfall rule. Okay.
Yeah, you're essentially deciding the order of credit. For example, if there's a Google click within 30 days, assign the order to Google.
Okay.
If not, check if there's a Meta click within 7 days and assign it there. If not, check Bing. If none match, it just defaults to direct or organic traffic.
So you systematically filter every single actual backend order through this priority list.
Exactly. And by doing this, you ensure that a single purchase only gets counted one time. You are forcibly removing the ghosts from the machine.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting, but I have to push back on this framework for a second.
Go for it.
Because we just criticized linear attribution for being totally arbitrary, right? Isn't putting Google first and Meta second in a waterfall just as arbitrary? Like, why does Google get the first bite at the apple, and why does it get a 30-day window when Meta only gets 7?
That is a critical question. And it speaks directly to consumer psychology. It's not arbitrary at all. It's based on the difference between intent and interruption.
Intent and interruption.
Right. We prioritize Google and give it a 30-day window because search is high intent. If someone actively types your product into a search bar and clicks an ad, that signifies deep consideration.
They're looking for you.
Exactly. Meta, however, is often interruptive awareness. You're just scrolling a feed, looking at photos of your friends, not actively looking to buy. Because it's lower intent, we restrict its influence to a tighter 7-day window. Think of the waterfall like a line of royal succession. We check if the most direct high-intent heir is present. If Google isn't there, the crown passes to the next in line, which is Meta. This ensures the order only has one rightful owner.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So it's an ordered priority model based on the strength of the signal.
Yes.
And once we run all our orders through that succession line, we can calculate our attribution inflation factor. So you compare your new deduplicated reality to what the platforms are claiming. Let's say Google claims $30,000 in revenue on its dashboard.
But your waterfall model only gives it credit for $22,000.
Right. You divide 30 by 22, and your inflation factor is 1.36, which means Google is overreporting by 36%.
And this step achieves something vital for a budget owner. Even if the waterfall sequence feels, a bit like a blunt instrument at first, it gives you a crucial correction coefficient.
You're not just taking their word for it anymore.
Exactly. You are no longer taking the platforms at their word. You're applying a necessary discount rate to their claims. You're bringing your expectations back down to earth.
Okay, so even if we perfectly strip away the platform's double counting, we're still left with a pretty massive blind spot, right? We know mechanically who drove the click, but knowing who drove the click doesn't actually answer the most critical business question of all.
Which is,
did the ad actually change the customer's behavior, or were they going to buy anyway?
Oh, man. Yes. This is where we must transition from the concept of attribution to the concept of incrementality.
Incrementality.
This is the ultimate truth of performance marketing. It honestly doesn't matter who touched the customer last if the customer was already sprinting toward the checkout line.
Right. And the course gets deeply into this because, especially at large budgets, platforms love to take credit for organic demand.
They absolutely feast on it.
The classic example is branded search. Your dashboard might show a massive 6x return on ad spend, 6x ROAS for people searching your exact company name. But how much of that is real? To find out, we have to run a geo holdout test.
This is how you separate the signal from the noise. You design a controlled experiment out in the real world, you withhold advertising from a randomly selected geographic region, and then you compare the results to a matched control group that keeps seeing your ads normally.
There's a really great business-to-consumer example given for this. You basically take cities that are demographically and economically similar. Let's say matching major tier one tech hubs against each other.
Okay, like where?
You select test cities like Pune, Ahmedabad, and Chandigarh. In these cities, you turn the ads off completely, or at least severely reduce them. Then you have your control cities like Mumbai, Bangalore, and Delhi, and the ads keep running there just like normal.
Now, the key to this execution is time. You have to run this test for a minimum of 2 to 4 weeks.
You can't just do it over a long weekend.
No, absolutely not. You need enough time to smooth out day of week seasonality, payday spikes, and the actual consideration cycle of the consumer. If you cut the test short, your data will just be warped by random behavioral noise.
Okay, let's walk through the math on this because this is where the illusion completely shatters for me. Let's say your control group, the major cities still seeing ads, maintains a 2.4% conversion rate.
Normal baseline.
Right. But in your test group, where the ads are completely turned off, the conversion rate doesn't drop to zero. It drops to 1.8%.
The mechanism here is vital to grasp. That difference between 2.4% and 1.8% represents your incremental lift. It is the only portion of revenue that was actually created by the advertising.
So in this specific mathematical example, the lift is just 25%.
Yes. And what that definitively proves is that 75% of the conversions in that channel would have happened anyway, completely without the ads.
Wow. It's like putting up a giant, super expensive billboard right outside the front door of your own store. Sure, the people who saw the billboard walked in, but how many of them were walking there anyway?
They were already on the sidewalk heading for your door.
Exactly. You just paid a toll to a tech giant to claim credit for them.
You're paying a toll for a customer who was already in your driveway. And when you apply that 25% incrementality reality check back to your budget, that glorious 6x ROAS on branded search completely collapses. It drops all the way down to a 1.88x true incremental ROAS.
That is a total gut punch for a marketer who thought they were printing money.
Oh, for sure.
But it's so necessary. It forces you to ask, like, are you optimizing for maximum platform ROAS just to make your dashboard look pretty? Or are you optimizing for marginal incremental ROAS to actually grow the business? Because attribution models just slice up the pie. Incrementality testing tells you if the pie actually got any bigger.
And that distinction is exactly what separates a campaign manager from a true business owner.
Which brings us to the final and arguably most important hurdle. We're armed to the teeth now. We've stripped away the walled garden illusion, we've built our deduplicated data view with the waterfall method, and we've faced the humbling truth of our incrementality results.
You've done the hard work.
Now, as the newly minted budget owner, you have to take all of this reality and use it to get your chief marketing officer to actually approve your budget allocation.
Right. And this is where the psychological shift happens. You are moving from being an analyst of past data to a strategist of future growth. You have to build a robust 30-day ROI forecast. And to do that, you absolutely must apply your attribution correction factor to your historical baselines.
So no more taking the platform's word for it.
Ever again.
Yeah.
You do not forecast future revenue based on the 4x ROAS the platform told you yesterday.
Yeah.
You forecast based on the 2.9x deduplicated reality you calculated earlier.
And the research emphasizes that you should never, ever present a single point forecast to leadership. Like if you walk into a boardroom and say, hey, give me $50,000 and I will return exactly $180,000, you're setting yourself up for failure.
Because you're making a promise based on variables you cannot control.
Exactly.
Which is exactly why you must build a sensitivity table. A sensitivity table is basically a forecasting tool that models out different outcomes based on changing variables.
Okay.
You present three scenarios. First, the base case, which assumes your cost per acquisition, the actual dollar amount it takes to acquire a new paying customer, stays at its historical baseline. Second, the best case, which assumes your cost per acquisition improves by, say, 15% due to creative optimization.
Always nice when that happens.
Right. And finally, the worst case, which assumes your acquisition costs spike 20% above the baseline.
The structure of this pitch is laid out so clearly in the source material. You don't walk in talking about click-through rates. You open with the core business question, incremental revenue per dollar spent. You show them the deduplicated baseline. You reveal the true incrementality results. And then you use that three scenario forecast.
Yes.
And most importantly, you explicitly name the risk. You warn the CMO, look, if we increase Meta spend by 30%, it's going to trigger a 2-week learning phase where the algorithm resets. During that time, our acquisition costs are going to be 15 to 20% higher than our target.
You have to own the downside before they discover it themselves. You are preemptively answering the anxieties they haven't even voiced yet.
But wait, let me put myself in the listener's shoes for a second. What does this all actually mean for my career? Honestly, showing my boss a worst-case scenario table and telling them costs are going to spike feels terrifying when I'm actively trying to ask them for a $10,000 budget increase. Doesn't highlighting the risk just invite them to say no? Doesn't it make me look unsure of my own strategy?
It is deeply counterintuitive, I know, but it actually has the exact opposite effect. Think about it from the CMO's perspective. They are constantly pitched these rosy best-case scenarios that inevitably fall short.
That's true.
When you present a range with explicit documented assumptions, it makes you look rigorous. It makes you look like a financial steward, not just a media buyer blindly trusting an algorithm. If you walk in with a single, highly inflated platform number, a CMO might be thrilled today and give you the budget.
Yeah.
But what happens at the end of the quarter when the actual bank deposits miss the target by 30%?
They will blame you.
They absolutely will blame you.
And the trust is completely broken at that point?
Precisely. Transparency, admitting the risks, showing the worst case scenario. That is how you build a partnership with leadership. You're demonstrating that you're managing the company's money with the same skepticism and care as if it were your own personal bank account. If the worst case does happen, you don't look incompetent. You look like you predicted it.
And if the base case happens, you look like a genius.
Exactly.
You're managing their expectations, but you're also proving you understand how the machine actually works.
Yeah.
You aren't easily fooled by a dashboard, which means they can trust you with bigger budgets in the future. That is such a powerful shift in mindset.
It really is.
Let's take a breath and recap the journey we just went on. We started by breaking down the walled garden illusion, understanding exactly how cross-device tracking and mismatched attribution windows allow platforms to double count the same customer.
The ghosts in the machine.
Right. And then we fought back by building a deduplicated view using the waterfall method, ensuring the CRM truth was prioritized through a logical succession line based on user intent. We then discovered the harsh, humbling reality of incrementality testing, proving through geo holdouts that a significant portion of platform-reported conversions were going to happen anyway.
Yep.
And finally, we learned how to package all of that reality into a robust three-scenario sensitivity table to make a budget pitch that actually earns the respect of leadership.
It is a comprehensive, battle-tested framework for surviving the transition to multi-channel budget management. It just completely strips away the comforting lies of platform reporting and forces you to operate in the realm of financial reality.
It really does. But before we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over, something that builds on the tension we've uncovered today. We talked about how a geo holdout test might prove that 75% of your branded search conversions would have happened anyway, completely without the ad.
Yeah, the 25% lift example.
Right. Think about the magnitude of that. 75% of the people clicking your ad were already walking through the door.
It represents a staggering amount of organic intent that performance channels are just scooping up.
Exactly. So what does that say about the rest of the company? If performance marketing is routinely taking credit for all these sales that were destined to happen anyway, does this mean that performance marketing as a discipline is secretly just riding the coattails of long-term brand marketing?
Oh, that's a dangerous question.
Or maybe it's just riding the coattails of a really, really good product market fit. Where exactly does the advertising's job end and the brand's job begin? Think back to our showroom floor metaphor. If those two salespeople are fighting tooth and nail over the commission for a customer who walked in knowing exactly what they wanted, maybe neither of them deserves the credit. Maybe the product was just so good it was selling itself. Just something to keep in mind the next time a dashboard tries to tell you how brilliant your latest campaign is.